Toyson Ford is your go-to destination for quality vehicles and exceptional service. At Toyson Ford, they have a vast selection of new and used cars, trucks, and SUVs to fit your lifestyle and budget. Their dedicated team is there to make your car buying experience a breeze. They offer financing options that suit your needs and a service center that keeps your vehicle running smoothly. Come on down to Toyson Ford and test drive your dream car today. They're located at 1000 Chippewa Crossing Boulevard in Chippewa Falls. Toyson Ford, where your road to excellence begins. Perks. I love perks. You love perks. We all love perks. And one of the best perks you can find in the Chippewa Valley is Hy-Vee Perks. Hy-Vee Perks is a free and easy program for Hy-Vee shoppers. Access exclusive perks prices, earn discounts on gas when you purchase designated products at Hy-Vee, and save more with exclusive deals, offers, and rewards. The best part? It's free to join. Not a part of Hy-Vee Perks yet? No worries. Just stop by Hy-Vee in Eau Claire to sign up. Start taking advantage of the best shopping deals in the Chippewa Valley right now with Hy-Vee and Hy-Vee Perks.
Welcome to the Man Cave Podcast with Dan Casper.
And we got another episode of the Man Cave Podcast.
Absolutely. Doing a little joint session today. Yeah. And it is busy in here.
Yeah, we got some people in here today.
I mean, not like you ever have a slow day here, but it is definitely busy today.
Always something going on here. I walked in here today. We had some meetings going on and some interviews going on, and that's kind of this is the place to do that.
Absolutely. Looks like some people kind of doing some studying too. So,
yep.
A little bit of everything out there.
I like it.
Yeah. They're probably doing their draft picks out there.
Mock drafts.
They're doing mock drafts out there.
Got to change the Buffalo one now.
Exactly.
All right. So, should we get to the draft?
Let's jump into the draft here.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're prepared too, man. Look at that. We did a little studying.
Yeah. You know, we knew you were coming today.
The draft is my favorite sporting event by far. It's my favorite thing. I went to when they first started making it a traveling thing and went to Chicago the first year, went to that. And at that point, it was literally a beer tent, a couple other things, and that was it. And now you see it on TV, and it's just like this insane event over there. But I'll be in Green Bay. I already got the hotel for next year.
That's going to be huge. Yeah. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is all that real estate that they've been buying for the last 10, 15 years was all for next year's draft.
Yep.
That field that they put in, all the, like, everything is set up to be able to host a draft. And they had that in their head probably 15 years ago,
I believe. I totally agree. Yep. Because you hear Mark Murphy, I mean, he's been saying it for how many years now? He's wanted to hold this draft, and he gets to retire 2 months after that. So that's a sweet going away party, a retirement party for him.
Exactly. So. The sad thing is, you know, they're probably going to get 12 inches of snow the day before the draft in Green Bay.
And everybody's going to complain.
All these celebrities that want to go. And now the diehard fans, they're going to love it.
Yep.
They're going to be throwing snowballs. They're going to be riding the sleds down the hill at the brewery across the street from Lambeau. But the celebrities and hoity-toities that go to the draft, they're going to hate it.
When the Super Bowl was in Minnesota a few years ago, we were over there, and you had, that was what they were complaining about. I'm like, everything's inside, though. Yeah. Like, you literally have to go outside for maybe a minute to get to your car.
Right.
And I'll be surprised if they have another one, just because everybody complained about it over there.
And it kind of adds to the ambiance. I mean, let's face it. As football players, we love playing in.
Absolutely.
I mean, I didn't mind snow. Rain was annoying because everything was slippery. But, like, snow, that was kind of the epitome of playing football. Like, in the elements, that was football to me. As a kid, I watched the Ice Bowl and all those famous games where these guys were like, I mean, look, to me, it appeared to be gladiators in a snowstorm. And I don't know, just take it as it comes. It's Wisconsin.
Which is like us with bowl games. You love playing in the bowl game, but you hate going to warm weather.
Yep.
Like, we'd rather play a bowl game in Camp Randall than we would in Florida or California. I mean, we respect the bowl, but hate that hot weather.
Yeah, and how about starting to get cramps again, like you did in like three
summer
days.
Camp.
Summer
exactly.
camp. Like, are you cramping? Yeah, I'm cramping. Like, oh, great.
Exactly.
Isn't it going to be weird, Chicago, with that new stadium for the Bears? They're talking is going to have a dome.
Like, I think that's going to be very weird.
Yeah. Like, I get it. Okay, so they want a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, they want all that. They want to hold Final Fours, which is, you know, that sort of stuff. But now Green Bay is going to be the only one in that division that's a domeless stadium.
Yeah.
That's just
– it's going to be very strange.
Yeah. Do you foresee Green Bay ever going to a dome?
No. I think the – when I gained – I've always had respect for Green Bay, even before I was a Packer. But when I really upped my respect was in 2002 when they renovated. Mm-hmm. And they had a choice. They were able to go to – at that time, every stadium was going .com. And they chose not to. They kept it Lambeau. And yes, they renovated it, but they kept it still the same. You know, they put more brick on the outside. It's not the old green stadium that I got drafted to in 01. But they kept everything else the same. Even the tunnel where they renovated inside, they kept the same blacktop or concrete that they had in the 60s. They didn't take that part out. Just so you're walking on the same ground that
Lombardi's they got that plaque right next to it over there. Yeah, it's really like, and then I know there's like Kansas City, they're going through that thing too with the Chiefs where taxpayers said no to a, so now there's like, oh, are they going to move to actual Kansas? You know, that sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
And it's just, and I know what Murphy said last week that Green Bay and the mayor kind of cut off negotiations and all that. And I'm like, this is just a PR war. Like, there's no way, there's Packers are leaving Green Bay.
Yeah. It, well, Joe knows I was a history major and I loved history and loved going to class. And I don't know. To me, I was born, I was a baseball fan long before I was a football fan. And I grew up being a Yankees fan growing up out east. And I was a fan of the Yankees in the early 80s with Don Mattingly, Dave Winfield, when they couldn't win a game. I think I went to two or three games my dad was able to take me to in my youth. They lost all three of them. But when they switched stadiums, it, like, I remember calling up my buddies and I'm like, this sucks. Like, I wish they stayed in that. And I know the stadium was falling apart this and that, but it was just history. And that's the way I look at Lambeau is there's too much history to move or to change it too much. It's one thing to add press boxes or luxury suites, that stuff. But it's just, you got to keep.
It surprises me because I've actually had some listeners say they wish there was a dome on Lambeau. For they just want to be comfortable in there. And I'm
spend more money sitting in the suite.
Right.
Or sit in the, not the suite, but like that section at on the end zone where
there's more end money, zone.
But you're inside.
Exactly. And it's like, if you're going to a game, that's part of the elements to me.
Exactly.
And it's part of the experience.
I
went to one Packer game when I was a kid and they played the Raiders. That's all I remember. And it was freaking below zero. And I froze my butt off. I don't remember the outcome of the game. I don't remember. I remember who they played, but I don't. I remember that experience of the guy next to me who was just had probably been overserved by himself, had his shirt off, and I'm freezing and my feet are freezing. But I, that's part of the experience. That's part of the ambiance. That's what you remember.
Were you debating going skin to skin to share body heat?
No, not even a little bit. No.
Boy Scouts, that's what they taught us. Skin to skin, you share body heat, you can warm up. I don't. I just don't want you to get hypothermic.
Is that why offensive linemen go sleeveless?
That's a tough mentality. Yeah, exactly.
It's all about show you're weak.
Yeah.
Ever.
So do you want to talk about like Green Bay's kind of doing, or should we get to your story first here? Because I know it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's, you know.
Well, I'll jump into mine really quick, and then we can get into the current draft. So my deal, where it started off funny was – I tore my quadricep tendon training for the combine. So I had to go back for the combine recheck. And then at pro day, and I think we talked about this in our combine episode, but at pro day, I ran a horrible 40-yard dash. And they sent a scout down, which I didn't say his name before, and I'm not going to say it now, but they sent a scout from Green Bay. He's no longer a scout. I think he's actually an agent now. He came down to Camp Randall. We're in the Dave McLean Center. And I run a 40 again. I think it was 3 days before the draft. He's like, the Packers want a better time on you. I run a 40, and he shakes his head no. And one of our assistant trainer, or one of our assistant strength coaches, Brian Bott, was in there. And he looks at me, and he's like, you got to pick it up. And I'm just like, God, I don't want to tear this tendon, but I'm trying to push it. Run again, shakes his head no again. And he goes to, we call him B-Bot, Brian Bott. He goes to B-Bot. He's like, hey, do you have a tape measure? And he's like, yeah, I'll be right back. Goes down and gets the, like, the wheel tape measure. And he takes the wheel, and I hold it on the goal line. Guy wheels it out, and he goes, I know what's wrong. Your field is measured incorrectly. Your yards aren't – it's not 40 yards. So he puts a piece of tape down at the 36-yard line. And he goes, somebody measured your field wrong. And I look at B-Bot, and B-Bot's like, just gives me a nod, like, just run it again. I run one more 40, and he clocks me at the 36-yard line. He goes, that's good enough to take back to Green Bay. So I ran a 36-yard 40, and the Packers were happy with it. And he knew, like, he was figuring out a way. It was, who was the GM before Holmgren? or not Holmgren, before Sherman took over.
Wolf.
Yeah. That was Wolf's last. I was Wolf's last draft class. And Wolf wanted me bad. But back then, still even today, and this is something I want to talk about today, all these kids opting out of running the 40.
Yeah.
Being like, look at what I do on tape. And I wish we knew that mentality back then. I would have loved to say, just look at my tape. Don't make me run a 40. But I ran a 36-yard 40. It was good enough for them to draft me. And my wife and I, at that time, we were dating in college. And I sort of had I became a man that day. And I was like, listen, I'm going to give you an ultimatum here. If you want to come back to Scranton with me, you're going to commit to go wherever I go. We're going to be together forever, blah, 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 blah. Or if you don't want to do that, let's just break up now. And she's like, no, I want to do that. So she comes home. We go to Scranton to watch the draft. And back then the draft was Saturday 1-3, Sunday 4-7. And my agent's telling me, Tony Agnone, he was a Baltimore, Maryland guy, but he was born and raised in my hometown, which was sort of made it a little bit easier for me to pick him as my agent. We had mutual people that we both knew. And he goes, listen, the Packers have 2 picks in the 3rd round. I really feel you're going in the 3rd round. And similar to like a Mark Tauscher story, Tauscher was getting phone calls in the 1st round. He ended up being a 7th round draft pick. I started getting calls around the 2nd round. And all of a sudden, the 3rd round comes and the Packers take Torrance Marshall with their 1st pick. And we're like, okay, I'm going to be the 2nd pick. All my family's over the house. My wife now, girlfriend at the time, is over the house. My sister, mom, dad, uncles. All of a sudden, the 2nd pick comes, and they take Baugeau, corner, out of Penn State. My house, it just became a disaster. Like, my uncle's cursing at the TV. Like, I'm thinking they're about to break the TV. I'm just like, screw it. I'm done. I can't handle this. We got a community park about 3 blocks up from my house, grab a basketball, and I walk 3 blocks and just start shooting hoops. And I didn't tell anybody. Hindsight, I probably should have said something to somebody where I was going. All of a sudden, they're yelling, screaming. My uncle's cursing. Like, we don't really speak fluent Italian, but they all know the curse words in Italian. They're cursing in Italian at the TV. And my girlfriend, wife now, is just scared. Like, what is going on? So I come back to the house a couple hours later. Everyone's like, where were you? I'm like, just blown off steam, shooting hoops. Get a call from my agent. My agent's like, listen, Sunday morning, they're starting with, I think, draft pick 101 on Sunday. He goes, the 105th draft pick is Green Bay. The 106th draft pick is Buffalo. He goes, Ron Wolf wants to take you with the 105th. But he goes, they already passed on you twice. If they don't take you, Buffalo 100% is going to take you. Get off the phone. I'm thrilled. I'm like, I have to go 5, maybe 6 picks the next day, and I'm going to be done. Mm-hmm. We have a party set up for Sunday night. We're going to enjoy ourselves. And I tell this to my girlfriend at the time, who committed. Now, keep in mind, like 2 days before, I said, if you come home, we go wherever you want to go, wherever I get picked. And she said, yes. So I go, listen, Green Bay's taking me. Now, she's from Hatley, Wisconsin, small town in Wisconsin. So they're diehard Packer fans. I get off the phone with my agent and I tell her, I said, listen, we're going to Green Bay with 105. If Green Bay passes, we're definitely going to get picked by Buffalo. She falls down on my high school bed and goes, I don't want to live in Buffalo. And I'm like, what about the talk we just had? We just said we're going to go anywhere. So that's basically my draft story. The second coolest thing that we brought up in our last episode was when you get drafted, especially when you're not there, and only first rounders basically go to the draft, is that you get a phone call from the head coach. Or I'm sorry, the GM first. Ron Wolf was on the phone saying, we're taking you with the next pick, which is, wish I had that recorded.
Right. Like, I was going to ask, awesome, like, what was that feeling
just
like?
Just an awesome thing to have happen. You know, like, I'm looking at my family because it's not on the screen yet. So you're on the phone. Mm-hmm. It hasn't come up on the TV. And I'm just like waving my hands being like, it's done. It's done. Going to Green Bay. Everybody starts yelling. You go from the GM to the head coach to the position coach, who was Larry Bechtel, who was a ball of energy in himself. Stands about maybe 5'8", probably 340 pounds, and just a spitfire. But then after the coaching staff, they put you to the equipment room. Now you got to start talking about like shoes, jerseys, all this helmet size, face mask, all that stuff. Because minicamp back then, minicamp was, I think the next weekend was the rookie minicamp. And while I'm on the phone with them, they ask about a jersey number. And I said, well, I wear number 60. And they're like, well, Rob Davis wears 60. You know, you're going to have to open up your checkbook for 60. And I'm like, listen, I'm not paying for anything. I'm not paying fines. I'm not paying for jerseys. None of that in the NFL. I go, what other numbers are available? And they go, 61's taken. I forget who had 61. 62 was Marco Rivera. That's taken. They go, 63's available. And the story I tell is, when I was growing up, my dad didn't really know a lot about football, but he used to rent on VHS tapes from the video store Super Bowl I and II to have me watch Fuzzy Thurston and Jerry Kramer pull his guards. And that's the way he tried to help teach me how to be an offensive lineman and a guard and how to move. So I go, 63 is available? I'm like, how is that not retired? And they're like, no, it's available. I'm like, I just feel weird taking 63. And they're like, well, hang on 1 second. We'll give you Fuzzy's number. You could call him, then call us back. Literally, they gave me his cell phone number. And they're like, give him a call. Call us back when you're done with Fuzzy, because we need to get this stuff done. So I hang up with them. I literally dial the number, and I'm like, Mr. Thurston? He's like, yeah, who's this? I'm like, this is Billy Ferrario. I just got drafted by the Packers. He's like, I know who you are. I've been watching your career. And I go, well, I wanted to wear number 60, but it's taken. They said 63 is available. I wanted to ask you, is it okay that I wear that number? He's like, absolutely. I'd be proud of you to wear it. So
that's so
got,
cool.
Then yeah. Later on, became friends with them, hung out with them, got to listen to a ton of stories. So mm-hmm. Yeah, so that sort of sums up my whole draft day. And it was just an absolute blast. We ended it with a party. I think we grew up, our fancy food when we had money was clams. We didn't do lobster. We didn't do oysters. It was clams out mm-hmm. I think we had 120 dozen clams at my draft party.
Wow.
We had like three grills. They were steaming them on grills, steaming them in the oven, steaming them everywhere you could. And yeah, 120 dozen clams.
Holy.
Good for you, man.
Yeah, no kidding. What was the cleat story now with the cardboard?
Oh,
I was going to bring that up. Yeah. So when they came in and they decided to retest your 20 or your 40, no. Your 36, actually. Did they check that height again that you've been you've been lying about since I met you?
Best friends like Joe like to always make fun of my height. So I wasn't blessed to be able to be as tall as Joe or some of our other linemen at Wisconsin. And I knew that was going to be a factor going to the combines. And I asked everybody that went to the combines the year before, like Chris McIntosh, Aaron Gibson, every guy that went the year before, I was like, how do they measure height? Like, tell me. I basically interviewed everybody that went to the combines the year before and said, what exactly do they do? Mm-hmm. Do you keep your socks on? How do you stand against the wall? Because I'm like, what could I do to help myself out a little bit? And I learned they don't make you take your socks off. They do a lot of things. You have to put your heels together. You got to put your feet out like a V. Your shoulder blades and your butt have to be up against the cinder block wall. But they don't make you take your socks off. So the night before the combines, I get a cardboard box and I just start cutting circles out of a cardboard box. And I take all these circles and a roll of duct tape in my suitcase to the combines to Indianapolis. And the morning that I knew we were going to do height, I taped about probably 4 to 6 circles underneath each heel with duct tape. Then I put my socks on and made sure the tape was short enough where it wouldn't show over the socks. And I got measured at 6'2 and 2/10. And I'm proud of those 2/10. Very proud of those 2/10.
I guess my other question too, with what you pack in your trunk, were you able to put your butt against the wall and have your shoulder blades touch? I don't think that's even possible. Is that a thing?
So you've been busting my butt for how many years about my height? Now you're going to talk about my butt?
Well, you know, a little bit.
Is my butt too big for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, just
that's
just
where my power comes from, Joe. I didn't have a bench, but I had a squat.
Okay,
that's I keep it all in the butt.
That's sorry. Awesome.
Now I keep a little bit in the stomach too. But we're working on the stomach. I don't know if I could. Maybe I could do a butt decrease. I don't know if they got that surgery.
No, that's fine.
I want to go back to the 40 quick.
Yeah. No, and there's a 36.
My bad. 36. Was that beneficial? Why do offensive linemen, like, that's the question now. Like, everybody asks, like, should offensive linemen even run a 40 when it gets to the combine?
In my opinion, no. In my opinion, a lot of this stuff is archaic,
mm-hmm.
but they trust it so much because they did. Nobody likes change in life. You know, if you're in sales, if you're like Joe and I joke about our coffees. We like what we like. You typically don't change because you don't know if you're going to like the next thing. They don't know if the next thing is going to work, and they know this has worked over time. In my opinion, it'd be one thing to have an old lineman run a 40, but you should be more concerned about the 10-yard burst.
Mm-hmm.
Because offensive linemen, like, I joke today, like when my son plays baseball, football, a little bit of other basketball, stuff like that. And he might be quick to get a ball. And they're like, oh, man, that Ferrario Jr., he's fast. I'm like, no, we're not fast. We're quick.
Yep.
Like, we don't run a mile. We don't run 100.
Yep.
But we could be quick in short bursts. And that's what I think is more important. Yep. And one of the things I think we're going to talk about today is, like, some of these guys that are opting out of different exercises, whether it's – and, like, here's another good example that Joe and I have talked about is the 2 1/4 test, the 225 bench test. You have to train – to do that. Mm-hmm. These guys have phenomenal numbers. There are people that just have brute strength, but otherwise you're training to get that number. Like right. Somebody like Joe Rye, and Joe had a much better bench than I did in college. And I'm just going to throw out stupid numbers. Correct me if I'm wrong. If Joe's max bench was 415, that he could do 415 pounds one time, it's going to be a struggle for him to learn how to do 225 mm-hmm. for 30 times. Right. Even though the math says you should be able to do it, you have to train to do that. Where we were training more for power mm-hmm. as opposed to
like conditioning or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think for the bench press test, doing 225, that's an endurance thing. Mm-hmm. That's not a one-time, what do you have? It's how fatigued can you get your yes. muscles and still perform? So I would rather almost do the one time because I can dig deep for that one. But if I'm doing 225, and I think the last time I even attempted a 225 test was when I was in law enforcement. We had a physical agility test type thing for SWAT. And, I mean, without training, I think I did 19 or 20 somewhere in there. And I was like, that's not too bad, considering I haven't done 225 since, like, college, you know. But
yeah, I'm sure every other person in that class was probably pretty intimidated by that number.
Well, yeah,
I doubt most of those guys are training put up that type of weight.
It's definitely a different whole muscle memory. It's fatigue. It's endurance. And let's face it, we're not built for endurance. We're mm-hmm. just built for power and speed and short bursts. So
yeah.
And that's why I was like curious. Like, did you find out what that number was that scout wanted it below? Like, obviously
so
they had
I knew
a set.
Prior to tearing my quad, my goal was to be below 5.1 in the 40. And after tearing my quad, the best time I think the best time I got at pro day was like a 5.4 or a 5.5, which mm-hmm. for a mid-round O lineman isn't that great. Mm-hmm. And I think when I ran the 36-yard 40, I think I got a 5.31 or a 5.29.
Okay.
At the 36 yards. Yeah. So I think when you Google my 40, whatever that number is, 5.29 or 5.31 that comes up. That's a 36.
Every time I hear 40-yard dash now, I'm going to think 36.
Yeah,
36 over there.
And just, it was so funny that it was just three of us in there, myself, Bebot, and the scout. And when he looked at us and was like, your field's measured wrong. Well, my first instinct is like, what do you mean? Like, we've been practicing on this field for, like, Joe and I have been there for 4 or 5 years. Like, nobody ever said it was wrong. And Bebot, Brian Bott, the strength coach, just looks at me and is like, just say yes. Like, I knew in his eyes. He's like, just nodded. I was like, okay. Now I started to get where we were going.
Right. Do you think, you know, like a lot of fans, I've heard this too. Do you think like when it comes to the combine or even pro days or something like that, they should focus like certain positions, do certain stuff like, you know, going to that bench press? You know, when I see a punter bench press 225, 20 times, I mean, okay, that's cool. You know, you got a rip punter, but I don't really care.
What does it matter?
Exactly. Right, exactly. Do you think they need to do more of that? And then you hear like the common fans say, well, they should do it in pads, you know, football stuff like that. I mean, do you think there's some validity to stuff like that? Or
I don't think pads make a big difference. I really don't. You get so used to wearing pads, it becomes like any other profession you choose, whether you're in construction, you wear a utility belt mm-hmm. or a construction belt. Like, pads were never a factor, in my opinion. I never thought, oh, my shoulder pads feel tight today. It just became like you're putting on your work outfit, I guess. So as far as pads, I don't really care. But I do agree. I almost think that they should make it specific towards your position. Mm-hmm. For, like, offensive linemen, for pulling, if you're going to be a guard.
Yeah.
Like, how fast can you get out of your stance and do your kick slide for a tackle? Like, those are the things that you should be measuring because that's what you're going to be doing all the time. However, if you're a multi-position player, where does that fall into place? You know,
no, I agree. And even Joe and I talked about the other day just how the Pro Bowl's gone downhill since when we were kids to today. And we were talking about, you know, as offensive linemen, one of the, I think, most surprising, eye-opening moments we ever saw in our life with football was at the Pro Bowl with Larry Allen doing the bench press. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a 315 test they did at the Pro Bowl. I'm not saying to do that, but, and this is half joke and half serious, it's almost like you should do the combines like a Pro Bowl and have them do that. People are going to love to watch it.
Yep.
I think scouts could learn a lot, even though when we used to watch the Pro Bowl, it was funny watching big guys run in circles and do this stuff. Yep. But you see who's athletic and who's not.
Yep.
Even at the Pro Bowl, guys that are the best at their craft, you see one guy do it and he's like smooth as could be. You see another guy and you're like, he's still good at his job, but
right.
he's not running like an athlete. Back to pads, though, what's funny has evolved. When Joe and I were in college, pads were as big as they possibly could
right.
be. They wanted us to be big, let alone protection. I think part of it was the look as well. By the my last team I was with was Carolina, and I knew I was going to play center. When I went in there, compared from college, I had the biggest pads. I think we had power pads back in college. They were huge. By the time I got to Carolina, I know I'm playing center. I grabbed a pair of receiver pads, asked them for a pair of scissors in the equipment room, and started cutting out everything around the front of the shoulder just to make my arms to not have any interference, especially with snapping. Mm-hmm. And like literally took scissors and just cut that pad out. And, you know, you look at even comparing uniforms, and we didn't even talk about this on our episode with uniforms. We wore thigh pads. We wore hip pads. We wore butt pads. You look at an NFL offensive lineman or receiver. We see more with receivers, but all linemen are doing it too. They have no pads in their pants.
Right.
They have no hip pads, no butt. Like in college, it was mandatory. You'd get a penalty if you didn't have the quarter inch, look like a hot dog bun, mm-hmm. tailbone pad in the back of your pants.
Right.
You'd get a penalty called on you. So we put them in. We call them RUDs, the spandex pants. They have pockets. You could put them all in there. But nowadays in the NFL, nobody wears thigh boards, knee pads, none of that.
No. Like, I remember Charles Woodson when he was with Green Bay because he, like, broke his collarbone.
Yep.
And they forced him to wear bigger pads to protect that, and he hated it.
Yep.
I remember he was talking about it. He wanted the really small ones, and I'm like, you know, it's that mentality. Like, I understand it, but it probably makes, you know, moves a little bit quicker playing the position he did in the back end there. But
hey, Bill, did you wear knee braces in college or no? I mean, in the NFL.
In college, yes. In the NFL, no.
Really?
So when I got to Green Bay, I took my knee braces from college to Green Bay. And I remember I looked around the locker room the first day of practice while we're getting changed. And we talked about this on our episode about uniforms. Our knee braces in college, they were either $1,000 a pair or $1,000 for the pair.
Okay. No, they're $1,000 piece.
They were $1,000 piece knee brace. They were DonJoy. Now, I'm sure the price has come down, but DonJoy just came out as this new company was a brand new knee brace. And it was a knee brace that technically somebody could roll into you and you're not going to tear your ACL because it's going to hold tight. Technically, because Joe's the exception to the rule where it didn't do its job. Maybe we should file a lawsuit against DonJoy.
Maybe.
I could be your lawyer. we'll talk about that in the next episode. But so I get to Green Bay and I look around the locker room. I'm like, don't you guys wear knee braces? And they're like, no. If it's slow, anything that hampers your game 1 ounce, you don't do. Mm-hmm. So I looked around. I literally took them, $2,000 of knee braces, dropped them in the garbage. It was just like, well, I'd rather, if I'm going to be slow and that's going to cause me to lose a job or to move down in the roster, I threw them away.
Yeah.
Just like cutting the shoulder pads. Just like, you know, when I played center, I never wore a glove. So, like, when I played guard, I wanted gloves on. When I played center, I was like, the one time I tried playing center, when it was raining or I was sweating one way or the other, my hands were wet, the ball slipped, and I was like, screw it, done with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just you eliminate it. And, yeah, it's a tough decision to make, and, yeah, you could end your career. But at the same time, too, you might end your career by wearing the knee braces, and you're slower than everybody else.
Right.
So,
yeah. So, that knee brace thing's been good because, obviously, you know, Wisconsin still does that, but that was a thing – when you guys were playing too?
Mm-hmm. Like, it became a thing, I think in 97.
Yep. Okay.
So prior to 97, I think it was a little bit more choice, and it was the old school, like 1970, like the metal bracket on the side of your leg,
mm-hmm.
where in 97, that's when the DonJoy came out. And offensive linemen, it was mandatory. Unless we went, I think when we went only helmets, we didn't have to wear them.
Right, but otherwise,
if it was only helmets or a walkthrough, you didn't have to wear them. But if we had shoulder pads on, you had to wear them.
Right. Yeah. How big of an adjustment was that for you guys?
It was huge.
I mean, not only that, but they weren't just like run of the mill. They were actually measured for you. They came in, they measured your quad, they measured your knee. I mean, so this thing was only, I mean, I couldn't borrow bills, you know? Yeah. I mean, it was custom made for you. Yeah. And it kind of gave us that Forrest Gump, you know, when he's wearing the knee braces as a kid. That's kind of the impression. But then after a while, like I said, you got used to it.
We wore them for 4 years, so you get accustomed to it. But yeah, in '97, I think that camp, we all felt like robots trying to walk. Yeah. You're like, oh, it's like bending with your knee, and you feel all awkward. And we even talked. You want to address the situation that came up?
So, and I think we talked about this on ours.
Yeah.
So after a while, you wear these things, and they never, ever dried out. So you wear them, and we were doing 3 days in camp and stuff like that. And like, no matter where you hung them in your locker, they were always wet. Mm-hmm. They were constantly being wet. And after a while, we developed like...
Well, tell them what they told us.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting to that. All right, sorry. Can I have a conversation here?
I get excited. What, you wanted to go get a coffee?
But go in the lobby. I'm busy here.
I'm sorry.
So we start getting these little red bumps and on your where your pads were sitting. And, you know, you thought maybe it was like an infected hair or something. So you squeeze it. And then the next day you have two and then you have four. And this thing is like spreading just where your knee brace is resting. And we just thought nothing of it. Well, then they're like, we know what happened there. You guys got stung by bees.
This is right before we play our first game of our college career, the kickoff classic against Syracuse and Donovan McNabb. Mm-hmm. Literally the day before, they're like, oh, there was a bunch of bees at practice and you guys got stung by bees. But all of the linemen, only offensive linemen,
in that certain area, too.
On the inside and outside the knee.
Yeah. And it's weird because it's only where the knee braces were. And I don't like those are some crazy bees to get in, you know, under my knee brace.
I think I would feel a lot of bees coming in.
Exactly. You know? I've been stung by a bee. I know what that feels like.
But we're all sitting there and we're looking at each other. And you all have matching, like, wounds.
Bee stings.
Bee stings. Like, oh, that one's gross. Like, whoa. Let's go. That was a big one. And it ultimately, I end up, and then to tell us still afterwards is, we had staph infection.
Oh, geez.
So they start drying our knee brace. They start dipping our knee braces in
ammonia
and drying them in front of fans. So it's like 10 years later. I'm in Wausau. I get to become friends with some doctors in Wausau. And I'm telling this story. And they're like, you had staph? I'm like,
well. We all did.
I go, we all had staph. I go, we did it as a team. Like all the offensive linemen had staph. They're like, you know, you could die from a staph infection. I'm like, well, they told us it was a bee sting.
So it was fine.
We all did it. Yeah. You know,
we all got through. We lived. We survived.
Oh my god! Wow. So you mentioned about players opting out of doing these drills.
So, and I don't know. Like, I know Braylon Allen was one of them. Now, granted, he's coming off an injury. The Wisconsin running back.
Even like Marvin Harrison Jr., the Ohio State wide receiver, didn't do anything.
I think this year, almost like when NIL started, everybody looked at it from a different angle. I think this year, I think it's going to hurt these kids a little bit because it's never been done before. But I think over time, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. What do I do? When I'm healthy, look at my tape. You either like me or you don't like me. But I think year one, you know, the NFL, even though it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, they're just archaic with their habits. And their habits are 40-yard dash, 225 test, you know, just different things that they've done every single year. And they're consistent with those habits. So I think it's going to be a possible issue this year, but I think over time it makes sense.
I also think what they're seeing on film is not a one, he had a good game. That's accumulation of over the years of this athlete playing. Mm-hmm. So if I've proved myself for 4 years as to what I can do, you see my highlights. I'm here for a reason. You know, is that enough? I almost have to agree with it in a way. Like, for your case, you had an injury. How that injury is going to affect all the work that you did for 4 years, 50 starts?
Yep. And that's
put on the tape. Yeah. Put on the tape.
Exactly. And there's the argument there. Is like, so my, like, sort of claim to fame when it comes to friends and family, like, for the most part, Joel probably disagree, but for the most part, I'd like to say I'm a humble guy. But one... For the most part, I said. I prefaced it with the most part. But amongst friends and family.
So that makes it true. Okay.
But amongst friends and family, my claim to fame, I argue, is my draft year, I went in the fourth round, 105th pick. But I was the third guard taken my year. The next year, in the 2002 draft, they had five offensive guards taken in the first round. Ooh. So now you go back to that number and look, okay, if that number didn't exist and there was no number to compare previous years and where should we draft them based off that number, the number one pick was offensive guard was Steve Hutchinson.
Okay,
I don't take anything away from him. He was absolutely freaking phenomenal.
That's good.
But number two was Mike Gandy, guard from Notre Dame. Not taking anything away from him, but I think me and him were neck and neck. And I think Gandy went either late first round or early second round. So technically, you could say it was a coin toss between me and him that I went third. I probably was the other guy he was looking at. If that 40-yard dash wasn't there as a number, would those two positions have swapped?
True.
Who knows?
He's probably taller than you anyway. So,
everybody was taller than me on the freaking offensive line. Like, I mean, come on now.
That's what I was going to ask you, too, if you remember the two guys ahead of you.
Yeah.
Because you had, like,
Mike Gandy.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, when I was in Carolina, which my last team, I get called out for a workout, and they brought two guys to Carolina to work out, myself and Mike Gandy.
Oh,
jeez. Got taken ahead of me. So they – and it was a rare deal. I went on – in 2003, I was on – I think I went on 16 workouts in 2003 when I got let go from Green Bay. This is after I was done in Washington. I probably went on three workouts, and my last workout was Carolina. They bring myself and Mike Gandy out there. We're out there. We do our workout, basically one after another. Like, he watches me. I watch him. We work out. We go back to the hotel, and we're waiting. The team organizes everything. So we're waiting for them to call us to say, okay, you got a driver. You're going to the airport. Here's your flight. They call us both and say, we're not sending you home until we make a decision. So literally, I'm sitting in my hotel room. His hotel room happens to be next to mine. And we're just sitting there. Finally, I walk next door and knock on the door. And I'm like, hey, Mike, what's up? He's like, just waiting. I go, you want to wait together? So we sat in the same hotel room. Literally, we're in his hotel room. We both get a call. His phone call was, you didn't pass your physical. My phone call was, we want to sign you.
Wow.
And they're like, they didn't send me home. I think I went home, flew back on the next off day, grabbed some stuff, flew back like one day back to Wisconsin, back to Carolina, just to get stuff out there. And then my wife drove my truck down like a couple weeks later.
But yeah, just fast paced that quick.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. Unreal. So, yeah, I was just kind of curious, like, you know, because you got guys college, you know, not even going to bowl games. I know we've talked about that before. And, you know, now not even doing these workouts and such. And that's what always, like, perplexed me, too, is like, okay, a guy runs a really fast 40, and all of a sudden he just vaults up into his first-round pick. And I'm like, you're basing that off of one straight-line run, and you got all this other tape. Like, what was it about that one thing that just skyrocketed it up there?
Right.
Like, I feel like
– you might as well go get the nation's leader in the 100-meter dash.
Right, exactly.
But can he play ball? Is he an athlete? Like,
right.
That's –
there's so much more to this. And I just, like, I understand it at a certain point. Like, you want speed. But it's like, if he wasn't a first-round pick, why did a 140-yard dash in a controlled environment instantly improve a guy?
And all that training to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I honestly feel like, I don't know, I could be completely wrong, but I honestly feel like there's some guys who just like, okay, I want to break that record or try to get under 4.3. And, you know, because they know they're going to get probably an improved draft stock for that.
Absolutely.
Or at least a lot of media attention for a few days.
Exactly.
With that. So, but, what I want to ask you one more thing with your draft thing. Did you have, this is going to sound bad.
Yeah.
Did you have caller ID back then?
No.
You didn't have caller ID?
We didn't have caller ID, but I think I knew a couple area codes.
Okay.
So I knew Green Bay.
So you knew 920 coming up?
Yeah, it was Green Bay.
So what was like the first words that Ron Wolf said to you?
I don't remember it verbatim, but it was something like, we're taking it with the next pick.
Yeah.
You know, this is Ron Wolf from the Green Bay Packers. We're going to take it with the next pick. And I think after that, I probably went blank for like a minute or two. Just said, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And like just kept listening. But yeah, everybody in the house started going nuts. So,
yeah. So what we see on TV was kind of like your house?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
A little bit like
only
that.
Like I said, the day before, a lot of cursing in Italian or broken Italian English. But
And now celebratory Italian broken English?
It was celebratory. It was celebratory on Sunday. Like, let's go
he's
get the clams. Let's go get the clams. Let's do this. Let's do that. Yeah. So we already had the hall. What was funny was we had the hall rented that was across the street from the basketball court that I went to the night before. Mm-hmm. So that's where we went to have the party the next day. So yeah, no, we had a really good time. A lot of funny stories. My one uncle made up ICCS t-shirts, Italian Clam Club of Scranton, with a big clam on the shirt. Some of my high school buddies still have it to this day, and they're like, this is glory from draft day 2001.
Perfect. Did you invite Joe to the party?
Yeah. Where's my invite? That's right.
I thought you were just going to show up. I thought best friends don't need an invite. I mean, you're there for each other.
I was in recruit school to be a cop. Yeah, that's right.
I didn't want to bother.
Yeah, that's it. Uh-huh.
I knew he was focusing on his 25 tests.
So. Where's my clams, guy?
I'll get you some clams.
And where's my shirt?
I'll get you a shirt.
I was going to say, where's the shirt at? Yeah.
I'm sure I got an extra shirt back in the house.
So how much are you, even though, because you were a part of that process, is that something you still kind of watch every single year now, or you kind of, I mean, it's a big deal now, like the drafts. I mean, would you say it's a lot bigger than when you were in it?
A lot bigger. Just everything that surrounds the draft, the lead up to it, even like how it is pushed out where it's only the first round, which, God, if I was a first rounder, I think it's almost harder to go to the draft if you want to be a first rounder today than back when we were younger, where if you went to the draft with us, you were expecting to be a first rounder, but you went in the second round, it just keeps going.
Right. Yeah.
And today, if you don't make the first round, it's all right, 24 more hours.
Yeah.
You got to leave the draft, go to your hotel, which I don't know if I wasn't guaranteed, I think top 10.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't be gone.
And how embarrassing, you show up there thinking you're going to be in the top 10 and you end up in like third round.
Exactly.
Like, and the camera is on you and your family's there and your girlfriend or something other. And like, you're really putting yourself out there. Uh-huh. You know,
you took the time to duct tape more cardboard to your heels draft day.
Absolutely.
So you look tall when you're on stage.
Absolutely.
I mean,
Yeah. It's like, cause you mentioned that too. Then the cameras are going to be on you. They're like, well, he's the last guy in the green room. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you got that label.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, well, for crying out loud, you know,
and how do you maintain
come back the next day or
how
not?
Do you maintain your face? Like, oh, well, this is great.
It's like, I don't even know if I'd come back the next day.
It's almost like
a participation award.
Absolutely.
You know, you get, because even like in the second or third round, Goodell doesn't even go out there unless it's a guy still in the green room. Yeah. Then he'll come out. I'm like, okay, I don't need the extra, you know, like pick me up there.
Thanks for the sympathy. That's great.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
But I'm sure like the movie, you know, like the one movie that I think there's a couple movies that are really, really close to what football's like. And one of them is Draft Day.
Do you really?
Yeah. I do think there's a ton of similarities in that movie to what at least potentially happens on draft day. But my point is, if you're one of those guys that don't get drafted in the first round, I think your agent is going to slam his fist on the table and say, you're showing up the next day. Because I think teams are going to look at that and say, oh, he didn't come back. Did he get defeated because he didn't get picked in the first? Like, I think a lot is going to play into the character of a person.
How does he handle adversity and all that stuff?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up draft day. I got to watch that. It's my like annual tradition now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I went to the theater to watch that first day. I made my wife come with me and all that. Yeah.
I love it. Joe and I just watched it again the other night. Yeah.
I mean, Sam Elliott as the Badger coach is perfect.
Now, I will say we weren't thrilled that they used the Badgers.
You were?
No, because, you know, like he's sort of the bad guy in the whole deal.
Bo Callahan. Yeah.
So it's like, I would have rather that been, I don't know, Illinois, well, Michigan.
Would you guys have gone to his birthday party?
Well,
was he open bar? 1,000% we would be there. Exactly. Otherwise, no, I'm not going to show up there.
But we're still posing him as the bad guy. Like, that's my thing. Is like, I just wish it was another team as the bad guy. And but it was nice to see Wisconsin. We did laugh. Just for all the fans and listeners out there, what you see in draft day, Wisconsin doesn't look anything like that.
Yeah, right.
The practice fields, the schools, any of that. So, but the helmets were legit. The W's, all that stuff. Why didn't they call us up? We could have been actors in the movie.
Well, then does it kind of grind your gears a little bit too that the feel good number one was an Ohio State linebacker?
You know what? I think it was tough seeing Ohio State, but you fall in love with them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just the situation. his attitude, the way he plays. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's still tough being mm-hmm. Wisconsin's a bad guy, Ohio State's a good guy.
Because like, he was going after Bo Callahan, which yeah. means the offensive line. Yeah. He was exactly, you know, yeah. having
the Wisconsin goal line was mm-hmm. breaking down.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, I'm just happy that the freaking state to the west of us wasn't in it. That's all I care
correct.
About.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's
I don't
right.
think they're just never good. Yeah. No. They're never good.
Well, there, what if Green Bay might be drafting a Gopher? Mm. Second, third round? Mm. Possibly.
I don't know. I don't have a comment.
Joe's gonna boo that draft pick.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
So have you been kind of following? Like, I feel like this draft for Green Bay especially is like every year. So like this is, like I said, it's my favorite thing. I do mock drafts. I love mock drafts. Yeah. I just love the draft. I don't know why, but I do. I mean, I remember watching it in 2 days and bringing out my Packer report and seeing their mock drafts and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I still remember when they mocked Rex Grossman to Green Bay to replace Favre.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that worked out. but, you know, like this one, I feel like this year is like coming off the season they had. I don't have a very good gauge of where they're going to go at this point. I keep going back to offensive line, not just saying it in front of you guys. Yeah, but
and I agree. I mean, you lose Bakhtiari. You got to have somebody covering Love. He's a young quarterback. You better give him some protection. You don't want him running for his life. I mean, he's not comfortable yet in the pocket. He shows potential. You know, he really does. I mean, he had a great season last year for his first time. But you got to have people to protect him. And otherwise, he gets scared back there. And it's a lonely place. And if he's running for his life every time, like your foundation, I'm sorry, is the offensive line. And your offense, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I 100% agree with Joe. I mean, the biggest thing we were told going all the way back to college is the game, the outcome of the game, it starts and ends up front with mm-hmm. the O-line and D-line. The D-line is going to set the tone for the defense with how much pressure they put on the quarterback or the run game. And the offensive line is going to set the tone for the offense, both in the run game and pass game. Yeah, I got to say, I look back to 2001, my rookie year. Granted, I was a backup in 01, but our O-line had our top five guys had so much experience. Mm-hmm. And then we had three guys as backups for those top five. And other than myself, who was a rookie, we had Frank Winters as a backup, who had like 12 years in the NFL. And we had Barry Stokes as a backup, who had like 9 years in the NFL. Those were the backups. Where when I look at a young O-line, especially in injuries, you never know. Right. You might get two injuries on the O-line game one. You might go the whole season without an injury. That's an unknown. But having those backups to be able to step in where nothing changes is right. greatly important. Right. Especially if you want to make a run deep in the playoffs, if not to the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. you got to have backups. And you need that at all positions. But I go back to it starts and ends up front on both sides
right.
of the ball.
You know, there's a guy out of Duke, Graham Burton, who I really like. He's a guy that plays multiple spots on it. I think last time we talked to you, like, was like the multiple positions on an offensive mm-hmm. line, the versatility on there. Then the other part of me is like, how much does a team like Green Bay kind of go back on their pedigree of like, well, we've been able to find linemen later in a draft. You know, do they, you know, address somewhere else in the first round because they've got this mindset, hey, look at the linemen we found on like day two or day three. You know, Bakhtiari was a fourth rounder, mm-hmm. Josh Sitton. You know, all those other guys over there too. Bill Ferrario, yeah, exactly.
Just say
who was that last one?
Josh Sitton.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, okay.
I thought you said something after him. I didn't hear that name.
But I don't know if that's a thing. Like, do they kind of use that as like, oh, we know we can find somebody out there. So they bypass. I think that's a dangerous mindset though to have.
I don't like it. Honestly though, but then you look back at the Tony Mandridge draft. Like yeah. come on. It could have Barry Sanders and we took Tony Mandridge and he kinda laid an egg on us. So but like I said, that's risky. I err on the side of caution. Pay the guy some money and mm-hmm. bring somebody in there that you know is gonna be at least a pillar in your projection. Again, can't count injuries, can't count a lot of outside variables. But you've seen him play. You know how he's wired. By now, you've done enough homework on the guy. You know his character. You know his work ethic. You know all the stuff because the background that the NFL does on their players is so extensive when it comes to everything. Mm-hmm. I know that me and Bill talked about that he was standing in there in his underwear, and they're measuring like his fingertip length, his arm length, and everything is so well documented when it comes to that. you kind of have an idea as to what it is.
Right.
I love how everything I've told Joe, he remembers. That the was underwear. Standing there in my underwear. I love that part of it. Here's what I'll say. I think everybody's a Monday morning quarterback. I do think one of the most difficult jobs in the NFL is to be a GM, especially in this situation. I side with Joe. When you have something that's guaranteed, when you have an offensive lineman that you've seen him play 3, if not 4 years, you know what he does. You know he's going to fit well in the program. It's tough to say, we're going to pass on him right now. We're going to take the best athlete available. Right. That always bothered me. It's like, what is the biggest spot you need to fill? Fill that with the first round draft. Mm-hmm. If you want to do the best athlete in the second, third round, I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. With that first round pick, I don't know. I'm not a fan. Maybe it's we're old school, but I'm not a fan of that best athlete. I'm a fan of what's the biggest need we have. Mm-hmm. Fill the need.
That's where I always chuckle when you hear GM say, "Well, we don't draft for need," and I'm like, "Well, you kind of do."
Yeah,
you know, because I mean, okay, Green Bay's at 25, and all of a sudden, you know, one of the top quarterbacks there.
Right.
So if you don't draft for need, are you drafting that quarterback?
You know, it's
stuff like that. It's like, I get kind of what you're saying, but at the same time, we're not stupid. We realize you're drafting mostly for need at that point. And that's like, if there's an offensive lineman there, and that's like, you got to trust your board, I think, at that point. You know, you hear these GMs talk about trusting the board, trusting the process there. And I think the big question when it comes to Green Bay is like, they had Walker play last year, the Northwestern kid. You guys have anything against Northwestern?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
They were always nice to me. They were nice people.
They got him at left tackle, and he played well. But then the question is, are they ready to hand over left tackle, which is pretty important, right? Are they ready to give him full-time duty? And if they're not, that changes everything. Or if they are, that changes a lot, too, at that point. That's where it's like, I look at this, then they're like, okay, do they need another safety? You know, everybody says Cooper DeJean from Iowa, you know, and it's like, I don't really have a good gauge where they're going to go this year. And that adds some intrigue, excitement to it, too.
You don't know what's coming. I think another thing, too, and I think it's a different regime now than in the early to mid 2000s. But I remember going back to Green Bay as a guest with a couple other former Packers, and we spoke. I forget what type of group was there. But the Packer finance person spoke back then, and he bragged that they were still $8 million under the salary cap. And the whole audience started applauding. And one of the players, I'm trying to think who, I don't know if it was Antonio Freeman. It was somebody that I played with that was very outspoken. That's why Freeman comes to mind. I love him, but he's an outspoken guy.
Yeah.
Went up and grabbed the mic and goes, "Stop clapping. That's nothing to be proud of. We should spend every penny and win a Super Bowl." And that's my attitude, too. And I know that's more free agency than the draft, but that's along the lines of what's the mentality of the GM.
Right.
Where I look back at, like, when we were kids, those Dallas Cowboy years, when they were winning Super Bowls, they were maxing out the cap, if not going over the cap, every single year, but they have a trophy to prove it. It's like, and that's what this former player was trying to tell the audience is, there's no award or plaque for being $8 million under. I'd rather have – I don't give a crap about that $8 million under. I want a Super Bowl trophy.
Mm-hmm.
Spend every single penny you can to get that trophy. And that's the same with the draft picks. It's like you got to – when you're drafting – and I think that's what every fan hopes is you're drafting trying to win a Super Bowl that year. So that's why I think I don't like that best athlete.
Right.
It's fill the needs, fill the spots, shore up the holes – and let's put a Super Bowl team together.
Especially if you're a team that's got Super Bowl aspirations now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that clock moved up after last year, the way it ended. You know, one play away, a couple plays away, maybe from going to the NFC Championship game.
Right.
And going up against a team that you just kicked their butt on Thanksgiving, so you're probably feeling pretty good about your chances to go there. You know, as offensive lineman, you know, Matt LaFleur says a lot when it comes, and he's going to, I guarantee he's probably going to say it like 15 times when training camp opens, the five best play. He said that the last couple of years when it comes to offensive linemen. When you hear that, I mean, I think there's some grace to it. You know, I know what he's getting at, but, I mean, there's got to be some flexibility with that, too. Like, I mean, okay, you might have two really good left tackles, but maybe one of them can't play guard. So, really, it's not the five best play, right? I mean, when you hear a coach say the five best play,
right?
There's still a little bit of interpretation in there, right?
And then let me ask you this. are you including in that? Maybe one's a better athlete, but the other one knows the playbook. He's been around here longer. So now his overall knowledge of the game, whether it's reading defenses and calling out stuff, like, it's not just – there's so many little things that go into how do you label the five best.
Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly. Yeah.
So. And I 100%, once again, I think it's because we're best friends that I always agree with Joe. Because our minds are like identical here.
You're kind of like Troy Aikman on the broadcast with Joe Buck.
I agree. But I do, and it makes sense. I mean, Joe and I know what it's like as an O-line's one of those positions that five guys have to play the same. It's almost like a dance. Mm-hmm. You have to know what the guys next to you are doing, mm-hmm. where their feet are, what they're looking at. Where most other positions, whether it's offense or defense, you're sort of on an island for the most part. We're O-linemen, it has to work. And to Joe's point, if somebody knows the playbook, but you just drafted an O-lineman with the 15th or 20th pick of the first round, that O-lineman that has the experience is probably the guy that is least going to start out until the guy behind him beats him out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I think knowledge and experience play a huge factor in who those top five are.
Right. Yeah, and it's like – you know, you hear some coaches say that they don't care about your draft stock or anything like that. But, I mean, you went through it. A first-rounder is probably going to come in with a little bit more leeway, would you say? Or at least a little bit more like, okay, you're going to get the shot compared to maybe a sixth-rounder or seventh-rounder. Like, feel like if you're that late draft pick, the coaches can say, doesn't matter. It kind of does.
Yeah.
Because opportunities, right? Absolutely. I mean, those guys drafted higher are going to get more opportunities.
And I think that's where LaFleur is coming from. I think that statement, at least from our point of view as players, is every day we're judging. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you got to produce every single day. Where if that first rounder comes out, say it's a first round left tackle and we don't have a left tackle spot. If he comes out every day and he's dogging it in one-on-one pass rush, he's getting beat in 9-on-7, he's not going to be given that job. That's, mm-hmm. to me, that's what the best five are going to play. Right. You have to prove – camp's 6 weeks long. It's 2 weeks and then 4 weeks of preseason. Maybe they reduced it by a week with preseason, but camp is long, mm-hmm. and you got to produce every single practice every day. And I think that's what, at least my interpretation of what LaFleur is saying, mm-hmm. you got to produce. And whoever produces the most, we're going to have those guys playing on the O-line.
What do you make of, like, now compared to, like, when you guys were younger and in college to where it's at now? You got people doing, like, me mock drafts that just live for this stuff. And, you know, you go online and people's got, like, seven versions of their mock draft, and they'll probably end up with 22 different ones the day before because they're going to try to get five guys right in their mock draft. I mean, it's like, what, 20-some years now, how it's changed in the perception of this thing? Yeah. Like, it's a huge event.
I think everything about it, even between the draft, fantasy football, which came out after we were done, at least done in college, I just think it's all blown up, and it's what the business of the NFL represents. I mean, mm-hmm. this all helps the NFL as a brand.
Yep.
The mock drafts, the fantasy football, all that. But yeah,
it's 12 months sport now, yes. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The coverage, the playing overseas, playing in other countries, trying to gain more fans. Mm-hmm. It's all about the business. And it's not bad, but yeah, it's a business.
You guys have liked to have played overseas?
No.
No?
I would like to experience it. I wouldn't want the plane flight. I wouldn't want the. Once again, we don't like change. Most people don't like change. Mm-hmm. Offensive linemen, when you play on the road, you're in a different locker. The field's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. You know, like, no, I'd say no.
No, probably not. I don't like airplanes either. I don't fit in them very well. so, you know, and we had a couple of planes where we were had a fly commercial and a couple of plane rides, and you have three guys my size sitting in a seat next to each other. I don't care if you shower before you get on the plane. By the time you walk out of there, it's hot box, and it's
we had a couple close calls too. Yeah, on planes. Yeah,
yes, we did. but yeah, so probably not. Although it'd be kind of fun to go play over in Poland. There's some good food there. So mm-hmm.
yeah, I know there were talkers Green Bay might open up in, I think, is it Brazil against the Eagles?
That just sounds hot.
Yeah,
it just sounds miserably hot. Yes.
And again, Mark Murphy's kind of doing these subtle things. He's like, we embrace that. He's like, but, you know, travel-wise, we don't have the right airport to go there. So he's already setting it up. He's like, well, then we'd have to go to Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that's a competitive decision. I'm like, you could just say we don't want to play there. Right? Yeah. We don't want to go
there. Well, I think, though,
game.
Too, am I right or wrong? If it's, I think the challenge with Green Bay is if they're the team that's given up a home game.
Yeah.
I think that's what's big, where the fans don't want that.
Right.
They don't want to lose a home game
right.
just to allow the team to play overseas.
Well, even like road, or like if they're on the road, because you go to some of these stadiums and it's like, well, they don't want to give up their home game against the Packers because the fans travel. The,
exactly.
Yeah. You know, so they're in that spot too, where, you know, when they added that ninth game every other year, that's when they played in England the first year.
Yeah.
So, you know, season ticket holders still got their eight. You know, they didn't lose
it. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. So. Who do you got on your notes over there? You got some dudes?
Yeah, so we were looking.
You got your scouting cap on right
now? Yeah, we got – Joe and I were talking a little bit, and I said, listen, we got to do an O-lineman, and most of these papers have O-lineman. I don't know them that well, but I'm happy. Tyler Guyton, offensive lineman from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Graham Barton, offensive lineman from Duke.
Yep.
There's quite a few O-linemen, which I was happy about, but the reason I slid this paper up was I said to Joe, I go, listen – I'm not saying I want to draft a defensive guy, nor do I know anything about this guy, but Kool-Aid
McKinstry.
Yeah. I go, I sort of want to hear him draft him just to, not in the first round, but I want him to be a Packer just to have a
Kool-Aid. Well, I mean, they at the combine, they made him taste test a bunch of Kool-Aid. You know, that's kind of, yeah. That's the kind of content they were doing on the NFL Network.
Who's the guy that we had? Clinton Dix. Ha ha, Clinton Dix.
Yeah.
I go, it's just like one of those. You see the name; it's like hard to not like the guy.
Pac-Man Jones.
I don't know him at all. Exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Pac-Man, we know a little bit about. Like he's had a little off the field issues, but yeah, just the name. So yeah, that's why I slid it up.
And that's he's a corner, and I'm curious to see. They got a new defensive coordinator who has a defensive backs background. You know, do they kind of focus on how involved is a new coach coming in? Like Goody, their GM, is going to incorporate him on like, okay, what do you need? What are you looking for? What kind of player do you want? Because this is what I don't understand quite this. Why coaches still to this day, especially in the NFL level, try to put square pegs into a round hole when it comes to a player. You know, like I don't understand that. You know, like what I get it. I don't know if it's an ego thing. Like, okay, my system, I know it works. You're going to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get the most out of a player when they do something different, why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah,
I think control and ego are a big thing. Obviously, I mean, I think in anybody you know has some sort of an ego in some way, shape, or form, and then that at that level with that much power and in the position that you're in, then I think it's more of an ego trip. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you're concerned about you're the new guy who just got here, serving since yesterday, and like. I don't think you know what's going on. Maybe I have a bigger picture mm-hmm. that you're not aware of. So that's probably why.
Right.
And I think too, like similar to a defense, I believe you could stop the run a lot easier in the NFL running a 4-3 as opposed to a 3-4, but everybody converted to a 3-4.
Yep.
And I think it's just, we don't want to be the team that doesn't do what everybody else is doing. Now, maybe you might get beat on pass plays more. That's where I'm not a defensive coordinator, but I truly believe why not have four guys? When you're getting beat by the run, why not run a 3-4?
And that's what I'm excited about to see that change this year too. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, as an offensive lineman, probably love it, but you know, as a few years ago when they played the 49ers in the NFC Championship game and 49ers literally passed like 11 times.
Yeah.
And kick there, you know what? Yeah, I'm like, as an offensive lineman, you got to be like loving that game.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, let's do this every single play.
I love it when I don't care who's playing. I love it when you get to watch offensive linemen just go about their day and just morally dispose of people and watch you break the defensive lineman's will, mm-hmm. and they can't stop it. And you had the game against our where Coach Hughes was halfway out on the field.
Yeah, yelling. But that was our bread and butter. That's the way we got taught how to play football is they broke us down to build us into something that's basically a five-man machine that's going to break the defense down. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like to what Joe brought up, we're playing Ohio State, I think in 98 at the Shoe, and Casey Rubach, who is now the recruiting coordinator at Wisconsin, it's like the third quarter of the game. We were down, I think, 17-0 or 19-0 in the first half. We ended up winning 42-19 or whatever. Casey suggests to Coach Huber on the sidelines, hey, I think the backside zone's open. And we're just like, why are you suggesting plays right now? And our offensive line coach, Jim Huber, walks out. We're on ABC playing Ohio State in the Shoe. Huber walks out to the hash mark. So the ball is down on our right side, basically. The O-line bench is on the left side of the field. He walks out to the hash mark and starts yelling the name of the defensive line coach. The guy looks over and he's like, "We're going to run the power until you stop us." Walks back, looks at the five of us, and he's like, "We're running the power."
It was probably not as clean as Bill said it.
Exactly. He might have had a couple other choice words in there, but we're trying to be clean here. But yeah, it was literally Joe and I have had a lot of headaches after games. That was a game. That was probably one of the worst headaches because it was just power right, power right, power left, power right, power left, power like, and that's why Casey, like, I think Casey was being honest, also a little bit of humor, like, "Hey, maybe we change it up a little," you know, because he's just back blocking. We're like, us as guards, we're pulling nonstop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the linebackers are like, "The power's coming here." We're like, "Oh, great. They even know, they know based off of our formation where it's going.
Hey, it's
going
to be on two."
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. I'm pulling to the left.
But that's where at the end of the game, you watch a tape like that and you're like, well, now, granted, the first half we played like dog crap, but that second half, watching us just move that line time after time when they knew what was coming. I mean, that's –
it's just wearing them down throughout the whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. You know, exactly. You know, going back to Braylon Allen too, kind of, you know, full circle here, because I know you mentioned it a little bit earlier. I think he's one of the most intriguing players in this draft because he just turned 20.
Yeah.
He plays running back.
It's crazy.
He's got 3 years of service under his belt already. He's I mean, you can all see the pictures of him. At 17, he was already built, you know, like a Greek god. And with how the NFL views running backs and, you know, just kind of that to me is he's so intriguing because he just turned 20, but he's got that 3 years. We know he's from Wisconsin where they like to run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really curious to see where teams have him ranked because you're not going to get a running back that comes in the league who just turned 20. And, oh, yeah, he already played 3 years of college ball.
Yeah. And I think the age is going to help him a ton because I think from Joe and I's time to today, the running backs have – lowered in value. Mm-hmm. Where like he probably would have been a top three or top five pick 25 years ago.
Yep.
But I think running backs are just they're devalued more because they know they're beat up coming in. They're going to get beat up. But I think that age is going to help them.
Yeah.
You know, just looking at it like he's 2 years younger, if not 3 years younger, than most of the other running backs that they're looking at.
So exactly.
And let alone he's built like a freaking Greek god.
And the other part in this too is like, do you almost use a first round pick because the other part in this is like those first round picks get that extra year of control.
Correct.
So, you know, in first round, you get a fifth year option where it's like, okay, I got a 20-year-old running back.
Mm-hmm.
I can ground and pound that guy for 5 years. Yep. And when he's a free agent, he's still only 25.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's still a value.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like that. I'm excited to see where he goes and how high he goes because he's just got, he's something different from that position than we've seen the last few years.
Yeah. No, 100% agree.
So,
I agree.
You got it. I see there's that. Oh, I thought I saw a Minnesota guy in there. Don't tell.
Yeah, no. Exactly. We're not talking about
him. No. He is a safety man.
He brought it up and I'm like,
just remember the name Tyler Newbin. Newbin.
I'm going to forget before we leave the friggin' room. I'm going to forget.
He's gonna be humming it on the way home.
Newman.
It's like Newman.
It's Newman. Newman.
Another Caddyshack.
There you go. That's old school.
See, you are a golfer. We've seen you swing, and now you can quote Caddyshack. Yeah.
You can see me walk a week after that.
Because
we walked into the thing, and Bill looks at me. He's like, "Are you going to swing?" I said, "No, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to swing." I said, it's not feasible with my back.
Joe asked me, he's like, "Are you going to swing?" I'm like, we didn't know we were golfing 18. We just thought we're just having fun swinging. I go, "I might swing like four times, see how it works." We walked out of there, 2 hours later? We're like, we probably swung 100 times with all those balls.
All of that. And I paid for it for about a week afterwards. Yes. It was miserable. And I just had to suffer through it because there's nothing you can do about it. God. I just, on those days when you overdo it.
Yep.
And of course, I that competitiveness is still in me.
Mm-hmm.
So when I shank one, I'm just like, I don't golf. That's the thing. Like, it's not my sport. I don't even enjoy it, but I need to do good at things or I lose it.
I don't know if I want to go fishing with you or
Well, like how they say with boxes, what do they say? Like the punch or the power is the last thing to go with boxing. I think with us, it's that attitude that you're not going to tell us no. Mm-hmm. Like when I talk with high school kids, I remember I was inside indoor. We're doing Everest with mm-hmm. Chris Oswald. We're talking to a bunch of kids, and we're in this indoor facility. And I go, "You got to understand, like, so at this time, my hip was really bad. I couldn't even get in a stance, in a left-handed stance, to show the kids mm-hmm. how to get in a stance." But I said, I looked them all in the eye, and I'm like, "But listen, if you tell me I can't climb to the roof of this building, I'm going to die trying." Yep. Like, that's our attitude. It's like, don't tell us no, mm-hmm. because then we're going to do it. Like, yep. And I think that's the last thing to go. Now, granted, it's not always wise.
No, I'm not saying
that. We have to educate ourselves and be like, smart at all. This is stupid.
And while I was doing it, I knew I was going to pay for it. Yep. I knew it. But at the end of the day, I'm like, well.
You were just hitting good balls, though, too.
Yeah.
I
mean, not really.
Dude, you were hitting them straight.
Exactly. Until the freaking semi-pro guy showed up. I think you were the best golfer there.
That guy was that? Impressive. I don't know. The last guy who showed up late, you may have left, but he came in and he swung.
Once he swung one, Joe and I are like, yeah, you can take ours.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's like, well, what are we doing? Are we almost done? We're like, no. No. If you want more, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need more practice.
Yeah.
Just every swing he was swinging, it was like smooth as could be. Just calm, smooth. Boom, straight down the fairway. We're like, go ahead, enjoy yourself. Yeah. We're comfortable on the couch. We got pizza out here.
And his club speed was, and I don't know anything about golf, but you could hear him swing, and I was like, holy. I mean, he looked like – and he said he's been playing golf since he was in high school, and he plays like 4 or 5 times a week, and I'm going, that freaking shows, man. Like, good for you. That's impressive because I –
also a lot of coin.
I don't have that.
Yeah, no. I don't know if you had anything else, but one thing I want to ask you too, kind of going back to the drafts, you know, because you're a unique – obviously very few that got that call to the draft, and we hear players talk about that. Can you kind of give us a little bit like what that feeling was like when you got you kind of talked about the frustration, you know, leading up to it.
Yeah.
But after you got that call and all that, I mean,
it was pretty awesome. I mean, I remember. So here's funny what happened. So we're in Scranton, Pennsylvania, northeastern Pennsylvania. Literally, while I'm still on the phone, like I sort of covered the phone. I was like going to Green Bay. Then all of a sudden, like 20 seconds later, you see it on the ticker mm-hmm. that I went to Green Bay. Everybody that was at my house, all my mom, my dad, my sister, my aunts and uncles, cousins, boom, everybody left the house. I'm still on the phone and everybody disappeared. They went all throughout Scranton trying to buy as much Green Bay gear as they could. They went to every department store that was open that day and they literally bought all of Scranton, not like every hat, every t-shirt, every sweatshirt. They bought it all. And I just remember when I got off the phone, it was like, I remember looking in the mirror and like smiling at myself. And it was one of those like, you feel like for a second you got to the top of the mountain, but at the same time too, there's a really big mountain ahead of you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you accomplished this goal that you had, you know, your whole life, but now it's like the real mm-hmm. stuff starts. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember talking to my agent, it was like, you're on such a high, and my agent's like, hey, just so you know, it was Sunday. We're having a conversation. He goes, just so you know, on Thursday, you have to be in Green Bay. So I was like, all right, I got to fly back to Wisconsin. I think I flew back Monday or Tuesday. And I drove up. They actually took, as a free agent or punter, Kevin Stemke. So Kevin and I drove up together. And one of the funny stories, in that strip on, Lombardi Ave, mm-hmm. that they bought up for the draft, there used to be, I think it was a Hardee's.
Yes, there was.
Yeah, yep. It was a Hardee's. Yep. So we he's like, hey, you want something to eat? And we're like, yeah, let's go to Hardee's. We're in Hardee's, and I'm sitting with my back to a window, and I'm eating. And I'm about halfway through the burger, and I had never been to Lambeau before. And Kevin's from Green Bay. I go, hey, how close are we to, are we in Green Bay right now? Like, how close are we to Lambeau? And he goes, he just, like, points over my shoulder. I'm like, oh, that big green, that's Lambeau right there. We're, like, a block away, and you could see it. It was that big green bowl. So, yeah, it was just, you know, like I said, it's hard to explain. It's like every little kid's dream coming true. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there was a lot of work afterwards.
Yeah.
But yeah, in that moment, it's like you feel high as on top of the world.
Right. When did it kind of hit you? Like you were going to go over there?
I think it was when what hit me.
That you were in the NFL and all that.
Oh, I think showing up in the locker room. You know, like being, the other funny story was during, so that first mini camp, it was just a rookie camp in May. And Kevin and I, we ended up rooming together. We were at the Hilton Garden Inn. It's where they put all the rookies. And I wake up, it's like 4 a.m, and Kevin's eyes are wide awake, staring at me in bed. And I was like, can't sleep. He goes, no. I go, you want to head over? He goes, "You think it's open?" I go, "I don't know. You want to just go there and sit in the car?" We go to Lambeau at 4 a.m. And folks, don't try this. I'm sure they changed the locks and all this and that, but the door was open. We open the door, we walk in, literally turn the lights on in the locker room, turn the lights on in the training room, and just started walking around, like checking out the weight room, this and that. We're like, we got 3 hours to kill. Like, no one's showing up for 3 hours. And this is where talking about, I wish we had technology back then. We had the old, like Joe and I call it, the cardboard phone. We're in the phones that were, mm-hmm. you know, the paper that you had to wind.
Yep.
We took turns sitting in Favre's locker, taking pictures of ourselves. Then we both put on Favre's practice jersey. So like even to this day, Kevin's like, I wonder if Favre was like, oh, this jersey's a little bit bigger today. The Ferrari was stretched out while taking pictures.
I just smell like olive oil and garlic.
Clams and clams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
is that a marinara sauce? I didn't even need any spaghetti.
Why is there a clam in the bottom of my locker? Yeah, so we were in there for a couple hours, and yeah, it was just, you know, absolute blast.
Yeah,
absolute blast.
That's gonna be so cool
to be a part of. Like I said, every little kid's dream came true that day. But then, like I said, then the real work started because we had, you know, in college, we talk about on your show, where it took us 2 years, 3 years, 4 years to perfect the offense. All of a sudden, now you're handed a 4-inch playbook that's totally different. Mm-hmm. It's like, we're going to start practice tomorrow. We're installing these plays. The next day, once you get that installed on day one, now we're installing new plays on day two. You go through your mini camp. Now the next mini camp, that's when all the vets show up. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, we're rolling. And they know what to do. And you're like, sort of following, trying to fit in.
Did you have any vets give you a hard time?
Not, I'd say not really. We joked that Mr. Grabowski called me up because on our last episode, I talked about a fight I got in my rookie year. And she's like, why'd you get in a fight? Like, because she knows me as the nice guy. And I'm like, Mr. Grabowski, I'm a rookie. You know, like my rookie year in the NFL, I'm like, I don't remember what started it. And the whole premise was in Green Bay, they have the nightly news for a half hour, but then they have a half hour pack attack segment just talking about practice that day, which like blows my mind. And I told guys on other teams, that's unbelievable. Like no other place does it. But that half hour, they broke down my fight like it was HBO Sports. It was like Ferrario throws a right cross and they go to the Ferrario's got him by the face mask and oh, Ferrario got a rip shot. And I laugh about it. But Mr. Grabowski's like, what was the fight about? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I'm sure he pushed me after the whistle. And I just had in my head, everybody stands up for themselves, especially offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. And I go, I know it's going to happen at some point. And I think I chose that play to be like, all right, I'm going to dig my feet in the ground and show everybody on the team who I am.
Right.
So he gave me a shove after a whistle. And I think I just was like, all right, time to see red and go to town. And that was probably one of two fights I had in 3 years, mm-hmm. but it just sort of set the tempo as like, I'm not going to be one to be pushed around and, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to work my heart. I remember even I got into it verbally with Gilbert Brown. Gilbert, last year was my rookie year, and Gilbert yelled at me for holding him in practice. I'm like, Gilbert, listen, like, I'm not trying to ruin your career, but I go, if I don't block you, I'm going to get cut tomorrow. You know, if I block you well, they're not going to cut you. Mm-hmm. They might tell you, you got to work harder, you got to do this, you got to get his hands off. I'm like, to me, holding is when you see jersey pull. I'm like, Gilbert, my hands are inside. I'm moving my feet. Like, I'm doing it exactly the way it's going to happen in the game. I'm like, back off. Like, yeah. I'm not stepping down on this. Like, this is what's going to happen. And now, granted, the nice thing was that was after I got in the fight. Mm-hmm. And I said, it wasn't like I was challenging Gilbert, but I think he knew and everybody else knew, like, if you want to push me, like, we could go there, but I don't want to go there. Like,
right.
I want to do what I was brought here to do. Mm-hmm. And we sort of squashed after that. And he knew, like, I'm not trying to embarrass you in practice, but at the same time, too, I'm not trying to get cut.
Right.
Like, I'm mm-hmm. trying to keep a job.
Right. It's that unique balance, right? You're on the same team, but at the same time, you're trying to beat the next guy to mm-hmm. get that job, you know, to get that. So that's such an interesting dynamic.
Well, and so the other thing, and I respected all the defensive guys. Like I got to go up against Gilbert Brown, Santana Moss, who was another tremendous three technique with the Packers, but I can't wait. We're hoping sometime in the future, we're going to have Kevin Berry on the show. Mm.
U-71.
Yes.
I know that package.
He was my roommate in Green Bay for 2 years whenever we traveled. And Kevin and I both, at that time, we were both playing. I was right guard. He was right tackle. And we went up against KGB, And it was right after Kabir signed that huge contract he signed, I think, in 02. And we had Doug Peterson at the quarterback. And we have a pass protection, a slide, and we're basically giving him a look. He's on the first team. We're running with the twos, giving the first team defense a look. And Kabir, as Doug Peterson was about to throw the ball, hits him in the elbow. And that's like the biggest no-no in practice. Do not, whether it's a starter or the third string, you don't touch the quarterback, let alone touch him and throw an arm. So I go up to Kabir and I'm just like, listen, you got to knock that off. Don't do that again. A couple plays later, pass play, he hits Doug even harder in the arm as he's throwing it. And I looked at Doug, we get in the huddle, and we're giving the defense a look. And Doug, it was like a power to the left. And Kevin and I are on the right side of the ball. And I go, Doug, call a pass with a slide to the right. And Doug's like, he can't be changing the play. Like, I'm like, Doug, call a pass and push the slide to the right. And I told Kevin, I go, set to the sidelines. Make him come inside. And Kevin did. He set to the sidelines. And I put my helmet and my fist in his chin, took him down to the ground, and just started beating the shit out of him. And I was like, don't effing touch our quarterback. Like, if Favre goes down, that's the guy that's got to go in. Don't do it. I got that. So they just gave him, I think, $30 million. I got the defensive coordinator yelling at me. I got Sherman yelling at me. I got every – get back in huddle, though. Doug fist bumps. He's like, thanks, man. I'm like, dude, like, this is – like, what – are we idiots here? Like, we're all on the same team.
Right.
But, like, you got away with it once. Then I told you. Then you did it again. I'm like, then we had to teach him a lesson. But he didn't do it after that.
And at that point, he had nothing to prove.
No. Right? No. But at that point, his head was so big. And Kabir is a different cat.
Oh, I've heard. Yeah. You know, some stories.
He's definitely a different cat. But once he got that money, I remember calling my dad. I never saw anybody. I used to call my dad and say about, like, how – I remember when I was a kid, I had a guy from my high school, Mark Spindler. He was my idol. He went to Pitt and then played for the Detroit Lions. He ended up – he worked out with Chris Spielman.
Mm.
And when he used to come back to Scranton, he used to tell me as like a 12-year-old the type of workout. He was like, I just did arms with Chris. And he had me thrown up in a garbage can just doing arms in the weight room. And I was just always in awe. But I remember when Kabir got his money, I called my dad and I go, Dad, I never seen anybody turn a light switch off as fast as Kabir did. Wow. He got that money. He refused to show up for special teams practice. He was still on, I think, punt return and kickoff, just didn't show up for practice. During practice, team practice, he wouldn't even go out on first or second down. He's like, I'm getting paid to pass rush. I'll go out on third. Jeepers. And I was like, holy crap. Like, I never saw anything like it before him or after him. But that money, that changed it. Like, he just took that light switch and turned it off.
Instantly. Yeah. Man.
And then even people in the NFL – and this is why when he signed that, all of us linemen were like, hey, good for him, but he ain't worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, he was speed, and that's all he had.
Mm-hmm.
Once everybody realized he doesn't have an inside move, he doesn't have a bull rush, and he can't stop the run unless he's chasing somebody down from behind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they freaking paid him and affected the salary cap for years. And yep. That's another thing with GMs looking at situations like that. Like, we don't want to make a bad decision because that decision – financially is going to affect us
how many years down the road.
Yep.
Exactly.
I think the best part of that story is you just demonstrated how you don't mess with the offensive line or yeah. Quarterback, because
especially a quarterback,
there's ways for us to get you back. And it's great.
Yeah.
Set to the sideline. And you even told a story about McIntosh that was sent to the sideline and you,
yeah, and that's where I learned it. Not that this is anything bad, but Chris McIntosh, the current AD, I mean, it's not like it's an illegal play. But
it's not dirty. It's football.
Mac essentially taught me when we – back then, Mac was left tackle. I was left guard, so it was a slide to the left. But Mac used to say to me, if he had a sense the guy was willing to spin inside, he'd say to me as we're walking out of the huddle, like, hey, I'm going to overset him. You keep – and now this is where I have a nose guard – to my right, I knew all I got to do is give Casey a hand to my right, and I'm looking to my left. And as soon as that guy spins inside, he's not expecting, but just we started figuring out the timing. And like the first year was a little rough. Like I'd be hitting Mac or stepping on Mac's foot or doing this or that. But by year two and into year three, like we would just deplete people.
Yeah.
Like he'd overset him, and we used to love the slide coming our way. And just be like, oh, I hope the TV has a good video of this. Like, I hope they're not focusing on the quarterback and they actually see it. But no, it's fun. But yeah, to Joe's point, it's just, I don't know, like offensive linemen, and I tell people this day, I go, I don't think I've ever started a fight in my life. But as an old lineman, I finished a lot of fights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's like, just don't push us. Even in college, like, we had guys in practice that I'm not going to say a name, but I had a guy in practice my senior year. He was a freshman and hit me after the whistle. So, like, I got him and threw him down to the ground. Mm-hmm. Was just like, all right, tit for tat. Sort of. Yep. Takes his helmet off and throws it at me. And I'm like, oh, now you don't have a helmet on? And I got your helmet in my hand. And I went at him and I saw red and attacked him and got broken up. And I went in and I was friendly with this kid. But I go in the locker room afterwards. I'm like, don't do stupid stuff like that in practice. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to get hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not trying to be rude or whatever, but I'm telling you, don't ever take your helmet off. I mean, even Joe and I will attest, when we're on the road and that game ends, I remember being defense on the field, winning the game in the O-line, sitting on the bench. Before, as you get up off the bench, you go out to maybe shake hands, whatever, and go through the tunnel, your helmet's going back on and you're buckling back up, just in case. I mean, we had games where the game would end and you're putting your mouthpiece back in mm-hmm. just to go shake hands and walk out the tunnel.
That's funny because there was a game, I think it was the Cowboys or something, but there was a little scuffle and the cameras caught, and I can't remember who it was, but the announcer's like, well, look at that. It was an offensive lineman. He put his helmet back on.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right before, yeah. like 5 seconds before that yeah. scuffle started, he put it back on.
Yeah.
And so he's like, well, you must have known something was coming. Or, so the fact that you were just saying that, just like, yeah, you clearly put it back on.
You'd even tell younger guys, like, I mean, you just sort of know your environment, whether you won the game or lost. Like, maybe it was a game you lost, like we talked about, we lost at Cincinnati, and we had to walk up the stands to get back to the locker yeah. room, and they were coming down. So it's like, buckle up. You know, you look at the young guys, and you're like, buckle up, put your mouthpiece in, mm-hmm. like, just in case. But, or it's a game you win. I remember being at Penn State. Our freshman year, we lost. And as we went through the tunnel, people were throwing just yep. anything in the stands, they were throwing at us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got in the locker room, you're covered with, I mean, beer, which they don't sell in the stadium. Beer, soda, popcorn, hot dogs, ketchup, mm-hmm. whatever. You're just covered in it from getting hit. Then you go through the tunnel. And here's a funny story about Penn State freshman year. That game, as we just walked through the tunnel, had 20 people throwing sodas, all this stuff on us. So you feel like a dog, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Getting all this stuff thrown at you. Go in the tunnel, and I'm chin strap buckled up, mouthpiece in. Somebody grabs me by my jersey from behind and spins me. And as I spin, I grab the guy by the throat, and I got a fist ready to throw. And I look at him, and it was a teammate of mine from my 13-year-old state championship baseball team. He wanted to say hi. I'm like, Tommy, I almost put you through this wall. Like, what are you doing? He's like, you couldn't hear me. I guess he was yelling my name, and I was just focused on getting back to the locker room. But I'm like, Tommy, I almost put your head right through this wall. Jeepers. But, yeah, it's crazy. Now, on the positive side of it, and Joe can attest to this, when we went back as players, seeing Camp Randall today, I heard Chris McIntosh actually do an interview on this as the AD. He goes, yeah, it's nice. You know, we had to do things for the kids because of the generation. And you see when the Badgers come out the tunnel, it's yep. lights flashing, mm-hmm. the video. So what Mac points out, and I'll tell it quick and I'll let mm-hmm. Joe jump in. What Mac pointed out, he goes, listen, we didn't have that in the 90s. He goes, but what we did have, when you walked out, so our locker room was below the McLean Center. We walk up the ramp, mm-hmm. I think. And then right when you got to the top of the ramp, you had to cross a blacktop driveway, which was in between Camp Randall and the McLean Center. Once you cross that driveway, you're inside the stadium. Fans would be waiting for us at the top of the ramp. And I remember when we played Penn State in Camp Randall in 98 to make it to the first Rose Bowl. There were so many fans in between the stadium and the McLean, and then in the concourse, we had to walk single file.
Holy moly.
And we're at home, and I remember Mac was up front because he's the captain. I remember Mac looked at me, and he goes, hey, tell everybody else, buckle up, mouthpiece in. These are our own fans.
Mm-hmm.
As we walk through this pile, this tunnel, single file wide, because there's so many fans, they're punching us on the chin, like, to get you pumped up, like fists on the shoulder pads, slapping you in the head. And I go, it was like a boxer or a UFC guy walking to the cage or the ring, only fans are allowed to make contact with you. I mean, they're shoving you. They're screaming at you. They're grabbing your face mask, yelling like, you know, kill these guys, whatever. And it went like, that's where I go. That, I mean, your blood was boiling.
Yeah.
When you got on the sidelines, it was like, we were ready to go to war. And then I look at, oh, this is sort of like a disco that these guys go through. And I'm like, exactly. Does that really
get a light show? It was a smoke machine for the love of God. A smoke machine? Come on. Really?
Exactly.
I prefer the old school way where you walked up the tunnel as a team and you're going to war.
Yep.
And I use that term lightly, but it's a physical war.
Yeah.
And what pissed me off too, walking through there, I already have a headache for 6 months, beating on my head. Exactly. I'm going to go do that. Like, quit hit me in the head for the love of God. I don't have any brain cells left. Like,
I just wish, it's like, there's not, like, Joe and I joke about memory. There's not a ton of stuff that we could remember from start to finish. Both of us, we help each other out. If you bring in like Dave Costa or Casey here, we remember a ton of stories. But I could picture in my head that walk, that Penn State game. Mm-hmm. I wish there was a GoPro for like fame, because just saying it sounds intense, but until you're there and it's like you just did warmups, you're back in the locker room, coach gives a speech, you're ready to go. When you walk up and you're walking probably four wide. And you're like, holy shit, there's so many fans. Like, we got to go single file. Yep. Because the fans aren't backing up.
Right.
They're like, we're here to motivate you. They left their seats to come down to the concourse because they know the path we take to the field. I mean, it was just intense doesn't describe it enough.
And I don't think you can replicate that feeling.
No.
I mean, even in our age, like, adrenaline's a drug. I don't care what you say.
Yep. Yeah.
It's a freaking drug. And we're still – I can't chase that drug anymore. Hey, we had a good day at sales today. Like, and I made a wicked frappe. Like, you should have seen the caramel and chocolate drizzle I put on there. It was like,
and a light show in smoke doesn't replicate.
No, it
that.
Does not. It does not.
I don't care what generation you are. I don't care what you think.
No,
it doesn't. I mean, that's just
I still miss. I like to this day. Like, I miss being on a team.
Yeah.
That like, I'm like, I'll do anything almost to like. Can we create some sort of team so I can get like a jacket with a logo or something on it.
And I joke with people this day, like people are always like, what do you miss about football? And my first response is joke. And I go, I miss payday. But the second one's the serious one. I go, I miss the locker room.
Yeah.
I don't miss the games. I'll miss practice one bit, but the locker room, just that locker room. It's like that camaraderie, that teammates, your brothers, your family, you know, you're doing something as a collective. You all hurt together at the same time. You all celebrate together at the same time. You're all sad at the same time. It's that locker room, that camaraderie. I mean, that, and we talked last episode with Dave Sparger about, you know, like how sports translates to life, and everything you learn in sports helps you be better at life, helps you be more determined, helps you set goals better, helps with every single aspect of life. So
I 100%, like I didn't have a dad, you know, and all, so I learned all that from watching guys on TV or the coaches I had in school and then. And that was kind of like sports was my outlet to go out there, whether it was picking up a basketball and pretending the sidewalk block was my hoop because we didn't have a basketball hoop.
Yep.
But it was just like, hey, now I can – this is where I'm going to beat Michael Jordan or in the backyard and doing pass patterns by myself, you know, that sort of stuff. It's I don't know where I'd be without, you know, playing sports like that. So
I even go as far as – this coffee shop, this endeavor is something that was so far out of my realm that I didn't have a clue, and you rely on people. But what I did think I knew is I don't know how to fail. I'll work myself to death. I will claw with my fingernails and kick and scream and fight for every inch I had. You don't learn that in just life. Like, I was taught that whether it was good in football or bad in football, I incorporated every one of those positive things, how to lead people, how not to lead people. Everything was incorporated into this business I brought from football. And that's what a huge impact it had in my life. And my career was cut short, you know, with knee surgeries. And I didn't reach my full potential based because of that. But I took a lot more away from football than football took away from me, and that includes the concussions. And,
that's another shirt that you guys got to get.
And the 46-year-old that has memory problems, and I can't walk real well. Like, I have a stupid gait, and, like, I'm falling apart. All that was worth what I took from that sport, mm-hmm. honestly.
I think that's huge. We get asked a lot, would you do it over again? No. And, I mean, both of us, we're in pain nonstop every day. You know, everything Joe just said, we both have. We're both going through. But, yeah, you wouldn't give up mm-hmm. what you got out of it.
And I would do it yesterday.
Exactly.
Same result.
And not even saying the, yes, we had a lot of success and we were on some special teams in college. But even take the success away, take away the wins. It's the experience. It's what we learned. It's, you know, like, I think we're better dads for it. I think we're better husbands for it. I think we're better at our jobs, or we're better coaching others because of it. The positives outweigh the negatives.
Absolutely.
It's like, we don't want people, like, even they ask about our kids, like, would you allow, I got asked a million times, would you allow your son to play football? And he does. He's in his, I think, third year, going to be going into his fourth year with pads. And I go, yes, absolutely. Like, I don't want him to miss out on those opportunities. Now, the difference is we understand concussions today. We understand, you know, the right way and the wrong way to make a tackle and stuff. So it's, I want him to know what we didn't know back then, but at the same time too, yeah, go out there and do it. Go out there and learn that struggle, learn how to deal with adversity, learn how to set a goal and attain a goal, learn the amount of work you have to put in to get something you want.
Yep.
Things aren't handed to you in life. I think all those lessons are huge.
It relates to your career now. I mean, like, that's, you know, for the radio show, like, we didn't have one. The way I did it, I asked to have a sit down with my GM and sales manager, and I made a presentation. I went in there like it was game day.
Right.
Like, hey, we need this.
Yep.
Scared, you know what?
Oh, yeah.
You know, absolutely. But it's like, I was getting pumped up like it was a game mm-hmm. and all that.
Yep.
It worked. You know, just, but it was that. I don't know if I would have been able to do that because, you know, if it wasn't for my, you know, experience, or not to your guys' level, but, you know, just that adversity, what you were saying, you know, mm-hmm. and reaching your goals and that sort of stuff. So,
and I think the one thing too is just getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, and people don't like it. It was, it was the ability to still function when you're uncomfortable and get comfortable in that space. And I think that's super huge. And I think that's being lost now.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it sucks. Jordan, sometimes it hurts.
I don't know if you heard Jordan Love's quote, mm-hmm. pressure is a privilege.
Oh, no. Yeah. I like it.
No, that's
very, very true.
Yeah.
It is.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Well, you think back to, you know, like, our first day showing up, being dropped off at seminary, at camp. I mean, how uncomfortable you are. Like, I remember when I went in to different teams for workouts, or, you know, you join a new team, you don't know whether, where's the locker, or the mm-hmm. left. I mean, I remember asking parking attendants in the NFL, like, how do I get in the building?
Right.
I don't know. But it's just like, you have to. Here's a side story I'm going to say, and I'm not going to describe who it is because I'm friends with the person. But somebody I knew after high school went to college, and they gave him, he was probably like a double X, they gave him 4XL pants. And he was just uncomfortable. He ended up quitting 2 days later. Not saying he would have, it wasn't a big school, wasn't D1, it was like D3, whatever. But just, it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to figure stuff out. You know, like, it's uncomfortable when you're the third string guy, or you're the, like, when I went to Carolina, I was the, I think set that year, I think they set the record in the NFL for most guys put on IR. I was the 17th guy they signed during the season, but they had that many guys injured, and it was just like a rotating locker. And you get in there, and it's like, you got to learn the offense. You got to learn, hey, how are you doing? What's your name? What position do you play? Like, I have no clue who you are. How do I get to the practice field?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you gotta be comfortable doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, half of it's confidence, half of it's, you know, your past experiences, but.
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree.
Exactly.
Well, I think we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah. It was great having you, Dan.
Absolutely.
It was kind of cool.
It was fun.
Usually we're over at your place, but now you get to come over to our yard.
A little bit more elbow room in here. Yeah.
You not know, as hot.
Not as hot.
Not as hot. We got the fan
the air on. The AC cranked way down. Hey,
I saw today, there actually, like, there were some people there for, like, HVAC and all that. So maybe.
Oh, nice.
Maybe we're going to get some air finally in there. But no, this is fun. Like, I love chatting with you guys, and it's actually fun to, I was telling Bill when we were out there, I don't have to set it up this time.
I'm going to ask you. I pulled out. Help take that. That was part of the deal.
I got an email. Our staff meeting. They're waiting for me right now. So
we only got 20 chairs. We got to put back.
Absolutely. But yeah. So just thanks again to Cabin Coffee Altoona and to Pizza Del Rey. Mm-hmm. Cabin Coffee is located at 2922 Meadowlark Lane in Altoona, Wisconsin. And Dan, I'll let you sign off with yours.
Well, we appreciate it. It's the Man Cave Podcast. And a big thanks. It's not possible without 217 South Mills and these two guys over here, too. So.